All right, everybody, so welcome to our presentation today. I'm Mr. Atkinson, for those of you who don't know me. I'm a lecturer in mechanical engineering. And today, our topic of our presentation is science and creation, okay? This is a topic that I'm really interested in, and it's something that I've always found something that I wanted to kind of delve into more. And I know a lot of people have that same interest as well. So I really hope that today we can break down some of these things and kind of leave here learning more about truth. Okay? All right. I first want to start by saying something. I'm a Christian, an engineer, and a scientist. Many people today think of these titles as conflicting. Though it's true, right? In other words, you can't claim to be a true scientist and also a genuine Christian because science is based on facts and religion and faith. We hear people say that all the time, don't it? Right? Okay. The reason they more than likely think that is because they do not have a proper understanding of what genuine faith is. Genuine faith is based on a knowledge of actual truth or what is perceived to be true in the same way that a scientist's knowledge of the laws of nature allows them to have confident assurance, right? And actually, if you look in the book of Hebrews, right? The Bible is actually, the definition the Bible gives of faith. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for. The conviction of things not seen. So the assurance is the faith. Okay? It is incorrect to think of faith as fantasy or hope. Okay? It's incorrect to think of faith as fantasy or hope. Now that being said, when people prepare to listen to someone discuss science and creation, if the presenter is a Christian, as I am, they typically expect the presenter to go and try and demonstrate using some set of facts as evidence that the account of creation given in the Bible is true, and any scientific data which may seem to present a contradiction to this account is in fact false. You might typically expect to hear a vigorous defense of the idea that the earth is only a few thousand years old, what they call the young earth, versus several billion years old, also known as old earth, right? Or vice versa, based again on some set of facts or data that I have assembled from various sources. Now, by the way, different Christians hold different views on that, by the way, right? Some Christians believe maybe some few thousand years old earth is, others believe several billion years, others millions of years, right? Okay? You may expect to hear a discussion of potential errors in methods of dating the age of the earth, or dinosaurs, or the fossil record. I think every skeptic in this room is honestly waiting to see if I have some definitive smoking gun which can once and for all sway your minds to believe that the biblical account of creation is in fact true and that any scientific evidence contradicting the biblical account of creation is categorically false. I'm sorry if I disappoint you, but I do not plan to discuss any of those things in this presentation, nor do I presume to be able to convince you of the truth of what I'm about to say outside of the grace of God. My desire is that God will use something that is said in this presentation to convince you of the truth of the Bible, the most important thing being who His Son Jesus Christ is and why He died on the cross. My desire is that God willing, when you are convinced of the truth of the Bible itself, you will accept the biblical account of creation as true, even if there are aspects of it that you do not understand or that seem to contradict current scientific thought, simply because you trust in the credibility of God Himself and His Word. Everybody understand that? Okay? So I'm not going to try and demonstrate any of those things to you with facts or evidence, right? Now what I plan to briefly discuss and demonstrate are three things. First, is the difference between facts and evidence. Evidence is subjective, but facts are not. Okay? Now, let me help you understand a little bit more. I can say to you, here are the facts, and now it's your job to interpret them as evidence. Okay? The subjectivity of evidence is actually why I think it's important for me not to try and present scientific evidence to demonstrate the truth of the biblical account. So in other words, the reason why I'm avoiding all of that, right, trying to go through and demonstrate with using evidence the different things that the Bible claims, right, is because something that I believe the Lord is showing me. Evidence is subjective. So in other words, here are the facts. You bring your set of facts, right? I can bring the same exact set of facts, but we both interpret them completely differently, right? And we get to a stalemate. There's no progress that can be made in our discussion that way, all right? So that's the first thing. Let's talk about the difference between facts and evidence, okay? The second thing I plan to present is a wrong way in which we can interpret scientific evidence, specifically as it relates to the origin of the universe. Trust me, that'll blow your minds when we get there, okay? Lastly, I hope to demonstrate conclusively that there is such a thing as a spiritual realm which ultimately governs the natural realm we exist in. Okay? Now, I want to make something very clear before we continue. The Bible was never intended to be a science book. Everybody hear that? The Bible was never intended to be a science book. Right? Listen to me carefully now. I'm not saying that the Bible is not 100% scientifically accurate, even though some of the things we see in it may seem to contradict current or seem contrary to current scientific understanding of specific things in the past, present, or future. Everybody understand that? So in other words, the Bible is 100% scientifically accurate in what it claims, even if what it seems to be claiming is contrary to current scientific thought. Okay? That's a claim I'm making, okay? Now, I'm merely saying that the intent of the Bible was not to tell us in explicit detail about how the universe was created and how it works. That was never the intent of the Bible, okay? So it's not intended to be a science book. The primary intent of the Bible is to reveal the creator of the universe himself and to teach us about him, not the creation. Understand? Just want to make sure we're all on the same page where that is concerned. Now, a quick comment. A common problem on both sides of this discussion has been a genuine ignorance by both parties involved. On the Christian side, you may hear a Christian who knows little to nothing about science proclaim that the Big Bang Theory is a lie and the Bible is true, right? And the reason they say that is because they simply have a misunderstanding of the Big Bang Theory itself. And if you guys don't know, what it really has to do with, it talks about the expansion of the universe, right? How the universe expands over time, right? That's really Big Bang is a catchphrase for a more, significant, right? Set of scientific data that basically helps people to understand it better, okay? Right? So the Big Bang is like a catchphrase term that people can kind of comprehend in their mind, okay? But it talks about the expansion of the universe over time and how galaxies move apart from one another and a whole bunch of observations that were made in the past, okay, that led them to that conclusion, right? So that's what you might hear on the Christian side. Now, likewise, someone who doesn't believe in the biblical account of creation, right, they may lack a genuine understanding of history, and they may say Jesus never existed, right, which is categorically false, right? So on both sides of this debate, you know, you'll have people, right, who just because of ignorance, right, they'll make these claims that are basically completely false. And what happens is both sides lose credibility. Okay? So that's a problem that's existed, okay, when people talk about stuff like this. Alright, so as promised, let's get into the first thing in our discussion today, okay? And that is the subjectivity of evidence. Okay? So the first part of this presentation focuses on the difference between facts and evidence. We must learn to clearly distinguish between the two in our minds before we move forward. I first want to start by discussing a fundamental property or characteristic of evidence. To do this, we should start with a good working definition. Now, I like this definition, actually. I got it from Oxford Dictionary online. Evidence: the available body of facts or information indicating whether a belief or proposition is true or valid. Everybody heard that? Let me say it again. Evidence is the available body of facts or information indicating, that's a key word, whether a belief or proposition is true or valid. Okay? Collins English Dictionary actually had a quote on the website, and I thought it was very nice, so I wanted to use it, right? Evidence is anything that makes you believe that something is true or exists. Makes sense, right? Evidence is anything that makes you believe that something is true or exists. So what is the difference between facts and evidence? A scientist that measures some data can only say with absolute certainty that this is the data that I gathered using these specific instruments and techniques in this location. Okay? So a scientist can only say, here is the data that I got using these techniques in this location. Okay? Those are facts. Okay? Whether that data is actually valid is an entirely different matter. You realize that? Because you can get that data that's completely invalid, you know. Right? Okay. Again, all they can say with absolute certainty, that's the key word. Here is the data I collected, and this is how I collected it, and where I collected it. Now that data, whether valid or invalid, is not considered evidence until it is put in a context to prove, verify, or offer an explanation of something. In other words, this data tells us something, right? So when you use that data now to infer something or to try and prove something or establish something, that's when the data becomes evidence. Everybody understand that? Okay. It is extremely important to understand that data itself does not put itself into a context to prove something, but it's the scientist's job to do that based on their own understanding of what the data suggests. If the scientist is honest, their quest in interpreting that data is not to intentionally make errors in their interpretation to justify their own ideas, but ultimately, they will be on a quest to discover absolute truth. Right? The real reason an honest scientist, which I'm sure most are, most scientists, they're honest because they really want to discover what's actually true, right? The real reason they may make errors, you know, in interpreting data is simply because they do not know everything and they're not perfect, right? Which human being, you know, is perfect, right? Okay. Now, I want to demonstrate how the subjectivity of evidence plays a role in creating genuine problems in learning what is actually true. I saw this example once, and it works perfectly to demonstrate this point. Imagine a group of scientists is in a laboratory studying caterpillars. The scientists have managed to specially train one caterpillar so that every time they call the caterpillar, it will walk towards them. Okay? So they have this caterpillar, right? And they've specially trained the caterpillar such that every time they call the caterpillar, it will actually walk towards them. Okay? All right. The scientists decide to perform an experiment to learn more about the caterpillar. They first run a baseline test by standing together on one side of the room and one of them calls the caterpillar. So in other words, they're just going to make sure that what they've trained the caterpillar to do, it'll do, right? That's the baseline test. So they put the caterpillar on one side of the room, okay? And they all stand together on one side of the room and one of them calls for the caterpillar, right? The caterpillar walks towards them. Okay? So the caterpillar walks towards them. So the scientists are happy and they record that data, okay? Record what happened. Then now the scientists take a pair of scissors, right? And they cut the legs off the caterpillar. They cut all the legs off the caterpillar. And then they repeat the experiment, okay? So they place the caterpillar back exactly where it was before. They all gather together on the other side of the room. And then the same person again calls the caterpillar, right? What do you think is going to happen? Nothing happens, right? So the scientists are kind of puzzled. They call the caterpillar again. Nothing happens. The caterpillar doesn't move, right? So then the scientists say, okay, so they record that data, right? So let's take a look at the data that the scientists have to work with, right? We call the caterpillar, right? We didn't do anything to the caterpillar. We called it. We trained it to do that. And the caterpillar came towards us as it was supposed to. Now, the only thing we change in the experiment, the only parameter we change, we cut the legs off the caterpillar, put it back in the same location, and repeat the experiment in the same way, right? One of us calls the caterpillar, and this time the caterpillar did not come towards us. So the data is, when the caterpillar has legs, the caterpillar came towards them. When the caterpillar doesn't have legs, right, the caterpillar didn't walk towards them. That's the data that the scientists have. Everybody understand that? That's the actual data that they have, okay? Now, based on this data, the scientists record the following conclusion in a notebook. The data suggests, again, evidence now, right? The data suggests that if you cut the legs off a caterpillar, it cannot hear you. Everybody follow that? The data suggests, it's the conclusion they come to, right? The data suggests that if you cut the legs off of a caterpillar, it can't hear you. So in other words, the reason it never came towards them is because it couldn't hear them anymore. Not because it couldn't walk, right? Okay. Now you might think that's funny, you know. Right? You might think that's funny, or you might think the conclusion drawn is ridiculous. You know why though? Because you personally already know or are confident based on what you see in most animals you are aware of in nature, that a caterpillar's legs are not used for hearing. No, I actually checked on this. They actually aren't used for hearing, okay? So, all right, okay, right? Mm-hmm. But here's my question to you. What if you didn't know that? The conclusion they draw might actually sound logical to you then, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. So the facts were that when the scientists called the caterpillar and it had legs, the caterpillar came to them as it was trained to do. However, when the scientists cut off the legs of the caterpillar and the caterpillar was called, it did not come. Those are the facts. When those facts were used to draw a conclusion, the facts became evidence. Now, I want to point out that a good scientist would make sure to consider all possible outcomes of that experiment. And there's obviously more than one possibility, right? Okay. But again, that would be all possible outcomes that they can contemplate based on their limited knowledge. You realize that, right? They can only think about the possible outcomes based on what they understand. Understand? So they're limited by what they know. Okay? All right. An intrinsic property of evidence is that at some point, a human has to interpret some set of data to establish it as evidence. Okay? This can obviously result in variation and error. Here's a deeper fundamental question. What tells us that the conclusions we have drawn are in fact true? Let's think about that. Now, it's important to understand that those who hold to the biblical view of creation and those who don't all have access to the same set of information or data. You guys realize that? Right? Same set of information, you know. Right? We all have access to the same set of information. How they interpret that information and use it as evidence is where different views come from. That being said, I want to point out something interesting which you can all research on your own. Look at the order of creation given in the biblical account and compare it to the order in which those that do not hold to the biblical view hold that the universe and the earth formed it. Okay? I'm not talking about the processes now, you know, right? But here's something very interesting. I watched a documentary one time by a guy. He's an evolutionist, atheist, and he believes in that natural processes created everything, right? And what's funny, this guy's talking about how the earth formed, you know. I kid you not, I swore the guy was quoting from Genesis, right? He talks about how the earth formed, the order. I'm not talking about the processes that formed the earth, you know. But what was interesting to me is he went in order based on, he started with basically nothing, and he literally, the words almost came out of his mouth. The earth was formless and void. Just like it says in Genesis, right? And then when you go through, you follow the order of how things developed or in his mind evolved or formed on the earth, like dry land and all that stuff. The sky, the atmosphere, everything. Everything followed the exact same order of Genesis. Everything. So my question to you is this, right? Now this is a scientist, 4,000, 5,000 years after, Moses lived, right? Moses is the person who wrote Genesis, right? So my question to you is this, right? How did Moses get it so right? Right? Yeah, how did he get it so right, right? Is that scientist going based off of the data that he's been gathering, right? And information. How did Moses get it so right? Well, Moses wasn't there, right? So obviously, it's one of two things. Either somebody who was there told Moses, right, about what happened, right? It was revealed to him somehow, right? But by somebody who was there, correct? That's the only way he could know, right? All right. Now, we just talked about the difference between facts and evidence, okay? So now what I want you to know is I want to talk about interpreting evidence, right? How we can have there's issues in interpreting evidence, you know, as it relates to the origin of the universe. We're going to talk about that briefly, okay? And this I think is very interesting, actually. So now that we have discussed evidence in general, it is important to demonstrate how easy it is for evidence to deceive us because of how it is typically used to understand the origins of the universe. Let us use a simple example to demonstrate this. Imagine that there is a small remote village in a very isolated part of the world, okay? It's a remote village, an isolated village in some part of the world, okay? Now imagine the people in this village have never seen anything from the outside world before. They've never seen anything from the outside world, okay? Suppose we were to take a brand new high-end automobile, right? A nice car with all the best features of the car possible, right? And during the night, when everybody in the village is asleep, okay? We quietly place the car in the center of the village and then left. Okay? So we quietly place this car in the center of the village, you know, right? When nobody's aware of it or anything, and we just leave, okay? All right. In the morning, there will probably be confusion, curiosity, fear, or some combination of these in the village over this unknown thing that has suddenly appeared in their midst. Correct? Yeah. Yeah. Why is that? Because they just don't understand how it got there or what it is, right? Okay. Alright. Now, let me ask you a question. Don't all of us react that way instinctively to things we don't understand? Yeah. Okay. Now, after a while, the village may settle down and the fear and confusion give way to curiosity. Eventually, someone is brave enough to approach the car and even touches it. They observe no reaction from the car to being touched, right? Assuming the alarm is off, right? Okay. And they suffer no physical harm from doing so. As a result, the people become more comfortable being around the car, and they proceed to try and understand more about it. Some may even desire to worship the car, thinking that this is a god or some divine manifestation or blessing. I mean, come on, a big shiny object that you don't understand suddenly appears in your midst with no logical or reasonable explanation, and you're not going to want to at least entertain one or two mystifying thoughts about it? All right. Now, after some time, the people may eventually figure out how to open the car and are comfortable enough to go inside. They see a whole host of buttons, gauges and switches, things they do not understand at all. Eventually, someone may play around with the switch for the interior light, and it turns on. After enough time, they learn that moving the switch to one position turns the light on, and to another position turns the light off. Okay? Based on that information, they logically conclude that the switch controls the interior light. Furthermore, they may extrapolate that information to conclude that these other switches in the car must control other things. They investigate the car more, and eventually they discover that their conclusion about the switches was right, and they gain knowledge about what each of them operates. Their success gives them greater confidence in their ability to understand the car. As they gain more knowledge about the car, they realize that this car has a lot more to it than just switches and what those switches control. For example, they may eventually gain access to the engine compartment, and after a lot of investigations, realize that even if all of the switches they seem to understand so well before are activated, when the battery is disconnected, right, none of the systems the switches control will operate. Okay? So what would they think? What would they think to that at that point? Wow, this battery is really important, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, someone may eventually discover the ignition and turn on the engine of the car. They eventually come to understand, recharges the batteries. In other words, right? They discover the battery is really important, right? But one day, somebody messes around with the car and they turn on the engine. And after a while, they realize, hold a second, but the engine recharges the battery, okay? So what they're seeing is that all these systems are interconnected and they work together and actually work together pretty well, right? Okay. They even discover that the engine can run the car by itself. The battery is not even needed when the engine's running, right? Okay. As they learn more about the car, they start to ascribe greater focus and attention to certain parts they come to realize have a more fundamental purpose than others. While this increase in knowledge is occurring, the car itself will probably become more and more demystified in their minds as they learn more, right? Yeah. So in other words, as they learn more about the car, it becomes more demystified to them. They start to understand. Their knowledge of it grows, right? Okay. While they appreciate the car's complexity and the seemingly perfect harmony with which all the systems they have come to understand so far work together, they eventually get to the place where they start to extrapolate deeper, more philosophical conclusions based on what their experience in gathering the information has taught them. They start to realize that this car system works perfectly on its own, in seeming harmony. In fact, all the systems in the car support each other, and it all runs independently on its own with no outside interference. In fact, the villagers realize the system works so well on its own that the more they interfere with the car, the less efficiently it works and the more problems they cause for it. Okay? They realize that they can explain how almost everything works in the car in detail, and because of their success in this, start to realize that one day they will probably be able to explain everything about the car. Furthermore, since everything they have seen about the car operates so far, of how the car operates so far, is explained by something that is inside or a part of the car itself, and probably all things will be explainable in this way, right? In other words, everything about the car will be able to explain by something that's happening inside the car, okay? Everybody follow that? Okay. The idea that some external influence or controlling factor, right, will eventually start to have very low credibility, wouldn't it, right? If everything you're seeing in this car, right, is powered by or controlled by something else that's inside the car, right? Okay? And everything works together perfectly and the system seems very harmonious, right? Eventually, the idea that some external influence helps to run the car or operate the car gets very low credibility. You don't want to dismiss it, right?
Yes.
Okay, right. Because of this, they eventually draw the conclusion that because everything we can see in the car can be explained by something inside the car, no external influence is involved in the operation of the car, either now and may not have been in the past. Does anyone see the parallel I'm drawing here with modern scientific thought as it relates to the origin of the universe? Imagine the car is creation. Okay? Everything we see. Imagine that's the car, right? And we're the villagers. You see the parallel? Don't we say that all the time? Wait, hold a second. But we know that the sun heats the earth. And when it heats the earth, it produces these wind currents. And that's why we have wind, right? We know that gravity makes things fall, right? These are all things that are inside and a part of this universe that we live in, right? Agreed? And everything works so perfectly well together in a seeming harmony, right? Even when things are chaotic, there's a mathematical way of describing that chaos in a certain way, right? And we say, well, everything is almost explainable and works together so harmoniously, right? And everything in the system is explainable by something else inside the system, right? But what's the problem? Anybody see the problem? How did the car get there in the first place? And more importantly, how could such a system assemble itself? That's the more fundamental question, you know. That's what the villagers have completely missed. How did the car get there in the first place, right? And more importantly, I think, how could it assemble itself, right? That can't and will never be able to be explained by using any data gathered from the car itself. You guys realize that? That answer to those questions will never be able to be explained by gathering data from the car itself. Right? That's very important to understand. That's the problem, you know. Right? They will never be able to find data, right, to explain where the car came from or how it assembled itself, right? By looking inside the car. Okay? All they can do is understand the car. Okay? In fact, the only way that the villagers would be able to know about the origin of the car is if someone from the outside world who put the car in the village, or was at least present when it was done, came and told them where it came from, how it was assembled, and who assembled it. Does that make sense? Okay. Interestingly, if we had put the owner's manual for the car inside the glove compartment and the villagers found it and were able to eventually read it, it would give them some of the information about the origin of the car, wouldn't it? Right? But this would still require someone from the outside world putting the manual inside the car for them. Now, what do you think the manual would be in our case? Okay. All right, everybody followed that a while ago? Everybody saw the problem? You saw the problem? You can't use any data gathered about how the car works, you know, inside the car itself, right? To determine the origin of the car or how it assembled itself, right? All you can show is how the system works. See that? Okay. All right. So that being said, no, right? So that's a pretty bold statement. It says, all right then, so Mr. Atkinson, so what you have to do next, no, is show that there's a spiritual realm, because this entire argument is mute if you can't demonstrate that, right? Okay, something outside. What's this outside world we're talking about that controls these things, okay? All right, let's get into that now. Now, I hope that at this point we have clearly demonstrated how evidence can deceive us, specifically as it pertains to understanding the origin of the universe, right? I do agree that the universe does seemingly operate in a mathematically precise, ordered, somewhat predictable and explainable fashion, based on even just the limited information we have. The last thing I want to talk about is whether or not there is a greater realm and authority above and apart from the universe, which governs it and ultimately decides everything that occurs. Is this indeed true, and can we prove it? This is a common thing people look at and utilize to deny the existence of God and question the validity of the Bible, because in the Bible, God not only takes credit for creating the universe, but make sure to state that he has authority over absolutely everything, from rain falling to wind blowing. All of those things, right? So the rain that fell earlier on campus today, right? God would say, yeah, I'm the one that allowed that to happen. Everybody understand that? Okay. People look on such statements in the Bible and say to themselves, in the Bible, God claims that he brings forth rain and also tells us he can withhold it, right? Many times in the Bible, God says, I'm going to send a famine on the land, right? Or a drought, right? Okay? So God is obviously saying, I can do this. I can take control of the rain and make it stop falling, right? And other times he says, you're going to bring rain on the land, right? Or he says he sends rain on the just and the unjust, right? He talks about that, right? Okay. So he's claiming to be able to control this, right? And he does. All right. So again, people said to themselves, in the Bible, God claims that he brings forth rain and also tells us that he can withhold it. But how can this be true, since we clearly understand and can explain what causes rain and droughts from a scientific perspective, don't we, right? I can tell you scientifically why the rain fell earlier, right? Everyone else probably could, right? Okay. So how can the Bible be true, since it is clear that such phenomena are fully explainable and predictable scientifically to a great measure and seem to occur on their own with no outside intervention that we can see in nature? Back to the car again, right? I don't see any outside intervention causing this to happen, right? Okay? Where's the hand of God shaking the cloud to make the rain fall, right? No, I mean, a weatherman probably a week ago could tell you the rain was going to fall today, right? Predictable, right? Okay. I can honestly say I do not blame anyone for having such a dilemma in their minds, especially for people who want to understand why they believe what they believe and to be confident, Christian or non-Christian. How do you honestly reconcile that and, more importantly, demonstrate it, right? That meaning the fact that there's a spiritual realm which governs this realm, right? Can we demonstrate the existence of a higher realm which ultimately governs everything that happens in natural processes? Where is the proof for that? What data do we use? Okay. Again, we talked about the fact that you can't tell anything about the origin of the what's it called, a car. This is a car example. We can't tell anything about the origin of the car by studying the car itself, right? Make sense? The data gathered in the car can only tell you about what's happening in the car, right? Or with the car, right? Okay. So, what data do we use? How do we do this, right? Now, I had the same dilemma in my mind recently after hearing someone discuss a verse in the Bible related to this. I remember saying to myself, God, I am a scientist. I know the scientific processes that cause these things to occur and can explain them. At the same time, I know everything in the Bible is true. And the reason for that is because God has convinced me of the truth of the Bible. Okay? So I said to myself, how does this work? Right? How does this work? I remember thinking about all the times people said to me, don't try and figure out God, or don't try and put him in a box. And if not for the fact that God wants to reveal the answer to me, I might have just said, oh well, maybe there's just some things that we just don't know, right? We say that all the time, right? Okay, so that's kind of the dilemma I had, you know, right? God was kind to me though, right? And gave me the answer, which I now want to share with you. Okay? I want to use an example we can hopefully all relate to in order to demonstrate the answer. First, we need to understand the correct question to ask. That's very important. There's a correct question to ask. Okay? What is the link or bridge between the spiritual realm and the natural realm? What or where is the interface point? Think of that bridge as the interface point, okay? I mean, think about it. If God has authority, which ultimately means control, right? Authority implies control, right? Okay. If God has authority or control over the natural realm from the spiritual realm, how does he interface between the two? Okay. I studied controls as one of my areas of specialization in graduate school. And what is clear is that at some point in every control system, there's an interface, right? For example, the software in the computer telling a robot what to do interfaces with the physical hardware driving the joints in the robot, causing it to move through a special electronic board which converts the signals coming from the computer to a signal that the physical hardware in the robot will respond to in the correct fashion. Let me say that again, okay? The software in the computer telling a robot what to do interfaces with the physical hardware driving the joints on the robot, causing it to move through a special electronic board which converts the signals coming from the computer to a signal that the physical hardware in the robot will respond to in the correct fashion. Okay? So the electronic board which converts the signals serves as the interface point between the hardware and the software for the robot. So what serves as the interface point between the spiritual realm and the natural realm? The answer is absolute truth. Okay? That's actually the answer. We're going to go into that some more now. The answer is absolute truth. That's the interface point. Okay? Now that might seem completely abstract and may even seem like a cop-out to some, but I promise you, let me explain, and if you understand it, it will really change how you view the universe. Before we go into our example, I must do a simple experiment to demonstrate an important aspect of truth. Now, some of you may have seen me do this experiment before, right? But it's actually not, I'm not trying to demonstrate the same thing. I use the same experiment to demonstrate that absolute truth actually exists, right? But what I'm going to do now is actually going to use it to highlight a certain aspect of truth that we need to understand going forward, okay? Okay. So, in my hand, I have a tennis ball, which I'm holding some distance above the ground. Now, I promise you guys, this is not a trick question. Not a trick question at all, okay? Alright. I have a simple question to ask you. If I let the tennis ball go and do not interfere with it at all, will it stay where it is, move upwards against the pull of gravity, or will it fall downwards towards the floor? So what do you guys think? It'll fall, right? Okay, let's do this experiment. Okay, so the ball fell, right? Well, he said he's not sure, but the ball fell, right? We did the experiment and the ball actually fell, right? Okay, so you guys are correct. Okay. So the ball fell downwards towards the floor. Now, you guys predicted the outcome of the experiment correctly based on the scientific principles you are aware of about gravity and its effect on objects, and we know gravity was a natural mechanism responsible for making the object fall, correct? Okay. I have a simple question to ask, though. When did it become true that the ball would fall towards the floor? Before or after the ball fell? When did it become true that the ball would fall towards the floor? Was it before the ball fell or after the ball fell? Think about it carefully now. When did it become true that the ball would fall towards the floor? Before or after the ball fell? It had to be before. It had to be before. Right? Okay. Alright. No. I'm not asking when it was that gravity was established in the universe. I'm asking for this specific time I performed the experiment. At what point was it true that the ball would fall towards the floor? Before or after the ball fell? And it had to be before. Think about it. How would the ball know to respond to the gravitational field in the way it did unless it had already been established that it would react that way? You understand? How would the ball know to react to the gravitational field? It had to be established before that, right? Okay. We only observed the outcome of the experiment, but the outcome had to have been established before we performed it. In other words, the truth was that if I let the ball go and did not interfere, it would fall towards the floor. That did not become true as the ball was falling. It had to be true before the ball fell. Do you realize that also that gravity itself did not make it true that the ball would fall? Gravity was simply the natural mechanism that made the ball fall, because that is what was actually true. Okay? In other words, how gravity behaves has been established by truth. Okay? The gravity doesn't make the ball fall and then make it true. Okay? In other words, truth is not subject to gravity, but gravity has to follow what is true. That might be a little abstract, but think about it a little, and God willing, I'm sure you'll understand what I'm saying. So what we have demonstrated is that natural events are subject to truth. I.e., it is true something will occur in the natural before it actually occurs. Okay? In other words, everything in nature can only respond to what is actually true. But nature itself does not establish truth. My question to you then is, who or what established the truth about the outcome of the experiment we just performed? Now, I hope it is evident to everyone that whoever or whatever establishes truth must be God. Right? Think about it. If I'm the one who establishes what is true, what would be impossible for me? It would also mean that ultimately I have authority over everything, wouldn't it? Right? I mean, just think about it. Imagine that nature would have to respond to what I say. Everything I said, nature would have to obey me. Right? Truth can only be established by the one true God, because everything, the laws of nature, morality, even spiritual beings, are ultimately subject to truth. In fact, the only thing that truth is subject to is itself. Right? That's the only thing truth is subject to, is itself. Now, as promised, I want to close the presentation with a practical example to demonstrate this. Now, I remember a few years ago, there was a powerful hurricane headed towards Jamaica. Now, if I remember correctly, it was a Category 5 hurricane. It was Hurricane Mitch. You guys remember Hurricane Mitch?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. It was one of the most powerful hurricanes ever recorded at that time. Okay, this was years ago. It's like maybe 10 years ago, okay? All right. Now, many of us are aware that Jamaica is a nation where people pray. When natural disasters are headed to the island, many people seek God for His intervention, either with genuine faith or just a hope that God will intervene. Now, I remember watching this storm and seeing that the path of the storm seemed to be headed straight towards the island. Straight towards the island. When the storm was, I think it was about a day or so away, right, from making landfall, I remember watching in amazement as the storm literally came to a standstill in the ocean. A literal standstill stop. Some of you might remember it, right? Okay. Now, the storm at least appeared to me to stop in its path completely, you know, and stand stationary. Okay? I remember thinking to myself, it is as if God is making up His mind as to what He's going to do. Right? Either let the storm continue its path towards Jamaica or spare the island. Now, I'm not exaggerating. You can look this up for yourself, right? Okay? The hurricane made almost a perfect 90-degree turn, right? Away from the island, okay? Literally, go and look it up for yourself. Look at the storm track of Hurricane Mitch. It made almost a perfect 90-degree turn. And it actually had to, because if the storm didn't turn 90 degrees, if it went, let's say, for example, 75 or 60, some part of the storm, because it was that close and that big, some part of it would have hit the island, okay? All right. After turning 90 degrees, it literally moved in a straight line laterally away from Jamaica, and unfortunately ended up hitting somewhere else, right? But the point I'm making is, 90 degree turn and straight line laterally parallel basically to the island. I moved away from it, right? Okay. Now, this is the only data I have to work with. The storm was headed to Jamaica. That is a fact. The people of Jamaica were praying for the island to be spared the impact of the storm. That is a fact. The storm came almost to a complete stop along its track towards Jamaica. I mean, it might have been moving slightly, but it appeared, at least appeared to have stopped, right? Okay? Very close to impacting the island. So the storm came to almost a complete stop along its track towards Jamaica, very close to impacting the island. made an almost perfect 90-degree turn away from the island and moved in a straight line laterally away from the island. That is also a fact. Now, you might expect me to say to you, this is clear evidence of God's divine intervention because the people of the island were praying. Again, evidence, right? Okay. Now, I personally believe that there was the Lord's intervention. I personally believe that. Okay? Now, keep in mind, I'm relaying to you my impression of the facts as they unfolded. Keep that in mind, right? Okay? Because I want to be fair, right? But I didn't want to go there. Okay? I simply want to ask and leave you with two questions. Okay? Based on what we just discussed about truth. First question. If God truly does listen to and respond to the prayers of his people, Christians, right? What would an answer to that prayer look like? So think about that. Second, and this is the heart of what we've just been discussing. When did it become true that the storm would not impact the island, but move away from the island and spare it? Okay. When was that truth established? The only thing that I can tell you with absolute certainty, based on what we demonstrated earlier, is that it either was already true, as in, like, basically God had had to intervene, right? Or it became true before the storm made its turn away from the island, as the storm had to respond to the established truth. In other words, something said you're going to make a 90-degree turn. Understand? Okay. Either way, who or what established that truth? It was obviously nothing in creation, right? Okay. Now, I want to read a verse of Scripture to close out the presentation, all right? Okay. This is from Romans chapter 1. It's verse 16 to 32. And I'll end with this. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. But they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man, and birds, and animals, and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. For their women exchanged natural relations for those that are contrary to nature. And the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another. Men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves a due penalty for their error. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. Now let me ask you a question. Does that sound like the world we live in today? That's from the Bible, by the way, okay? So, the Bible seems to have us painted pretty good, right? Okay. All right, guys, that's the end of the presentation today. Are there any questions? Mm-hmm.